Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Zach Ryland, and this is your weekly edition of The Messenger. On tonight's edition, we're going to be reading the Friday, November 8th Messenger. So if you're joining us, it's about 6 p.m. on Sunday night on November the 10th. Or if you're catching the rebroadcasting of this, it's early in the morning on the 11th of November. So either way, we're really happy to have you guys here. Thank you for spending the time with us. We've got a fun messenger ahead of us today. This issue has quite a few articles on education and just the Catholic faith in education. So some really encouraging news and updates. First one here is brought to us from Laura Keener, the editor, and it's entitled Diocese of Covington Guarantee, a financial commitment to passing on Catholic faith. Thomas More University has announced a new initiative aimed at making a Thomas More University education more financially attainable for local students, called the Diocese of Covington Guarantee. With the Diocese of Covington Guarantee, Thomas More University is affirming its commitment to students from the Diocese of Covington by guaranteeing $20,000 in institutional aid to students who choose Thomas More University. Quote, in my inauguration speech, I spoke of the importance of providing every student in the Diocese of Covington with a high-quality, affordable Catholic education, said Joseph Chillo, president of Thomas More University. The Diocese of Covington Guarantee ensures that all diocese graduates, starting with this year's high school graduating seniors who meet our admissions criteria, will be awarded $20,000 in institutional aid. The Diocese of Covington Guarantee is not a standalone scholarship, said Rebecca Stratton, Director of Communications for Thomas More. It's designed to help bridge the gap so that each graduate of a Catholic high school in the diocese receives $20,000 of institutional aid. Many families who have a student in a Catholic high school in the diocese are familiar with Thomas More University's Parochial Promise. The Parochial Promise is a $14,000 scholarship offered to any student who graduates from a Catholic high school nationwide and attends Thomas More. Diocese high school students attending Thomas More University will still qualify for the Parochial Promise. The Diocese of Covington Guarantee will be added to the Parochial Promise and any other institutional aid until the total institutional aid received reaches but does not exceed $20,000. Non-institutional aid, like a student's keys money and federal or state grants, may still be used in addition to the $20,000 from Thomas More University. Quote, our hope is that students from the diocese who qualify for full federal and state grants will have nearly no cost to attend Thomas More with this guarantee. That came from Mrs. Stratton. All Diocese of Covington graduates who meet the minimum qualifications for admissions, a 2.5 GPA and a 20 on the ACT, starting with the graduating class of 2020, qualify for the guarantee. Another convenience for students is that there's not an additional form to complete to apply for the guarantee. A student's admissions application acts as the application, said Mrs. Stratton. Every diocese student that wants to gain a Catholic higher education deserves the assistance to do so, said President Chillo. Creating opportunity for our diocese high schools to effectively position the values and significance of a Catholic higher education begins with our responsibility of being the diocese university. The values and purpose of Catholic education are significant and relevant, and we must do our part to strengthen and advance the important work that was started almost 100 years ago at Villa Madonna College. For more information, you can visit the Thomas More University website. That's www.universitythomasmore.edu. You know, with as much as we hear these days about the rising cost of college educations and the amount of student debt that young individuals are required to carry, this is a great move from Thomas More, and hopefully if you all know anyone who's in school, whether that's, you know, grade school, middle school, or more likely high school, who's thinking about continuing their Catholic education, pass the word on. This is a cool opportunity for them. The next article comes to us more from a nationwide perspective. It's from Dennis Sidoki. He's from the Catholic News Service, and keeping in mind that the election day was earlier this week, this is focused on kind of the civility that we've got to keep during campaign season and during election season. It's entitled, Ahead of the 2020 Election, Campaign Stresses Why Civility is Important. Comes to us out of Washington, D.C. Rancor in politics, especially these days, may be the norm, but a nationwide effort is underway to remind people that civility in political discussions is a virtue. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops is introducing the Civilize It campaign on November 3rd. It stresses that respectful dialogue, rather than name-calling or nasty barbs, can occur among people with differing political views. Quote, in part, this campaign is really in response to the vitriol that we see in public discourse on both sides of the aisle, said Jill Rah, Director of Education and Outreach in the USCCB's Department of Justice, Peace, and Human Development. Civility is something that we, at least in theory, should all agree on, she told Catholic News Service. Catholics don't always come down on the same side in terms of where they discern to be voting, but everyone should agree that we can be modeling love for neighbor, and we can be modeling the example of Christ. The date of the program's introduction is significant because it is precisely 1 year from the 2020 presidential election. The idea for Civilize It originated in the Social Action Office of the Archdiocese of Cincinnati in 2016. Its success in Southwest Ohio caught the attention of the USCCB, which this year decided that the model, with a few tweaks, could be introduced nationwide. The effort will also incorporate the United States Bishop's quadrennial document, quote, forming consensus for faithful citizenship. The document remains unchanged this year, but the bishops will vote on a letter and four short video scripts to supplement it during their annual fall assembly in Baltimore on November 11th through 13th. Andrew Musgrave, director of the Cincinnati Archdiocese Social Action Office, said he planned to alert parishes that the program is continuing for the next year. He said the effort there will build on the successes of the program in 2016, which saw parishioners in dozens of parishes becoming involved. The campaign's cornerstone is a three-part pledge that individuals can take to respect civility, to root political views in the gospel, and a well-formed conscience, and to encounter others with compassion. Personal reflection is a significant component of the program. Resources developed by Rue's office will help guide participants in the tradition of an examination of conscience so they can better understand how they can respond to people with whom they disagree. Other resources include a pastoral aid that includes homily guides for masses November 2nd and 3rd, promotional materials for use in parishes and discussion groups, and also examples of social media messaging. The campaign, quote, is a way the church can be an example, Ross said. Quote, we can bring our moral voice to the public square. Civilize It also is part of a wider campaign known as Golden Rule 2020, which is being undertaken by the National Institute for Civil Discourse at the University of Arizona. That starts on November 3rd. Cheryl Grave, the national organizer for the Institute, said the campaign's title is rooted in the widely held value among religious and non-religious people, and Christians and non-Christians, of treating another person as you expect to be treated. Quote, we're increasingly concerned about the lessening of trust between people and government and for helping strengthen our democracy, she said. The program emphasizes the development of personal behavior to soften the angry rhetoric and harsh language that can emerge in any discussion about politics, explained Theo Brown, the director of faith-based programs at the Institute. Quote, we think the Golden Rule is a practical strategy because it really is a transformational thing. It can help transform that hostile behavior. We're trying to break the cycle of incivility, and it's very difficult, Brown said. The Institute is primarily working with Christian denominations in implementing its program from its Washington office. Among those that developed Golden Rule 2020 are the National Council of Churches, the National Association of Evangelicals, Presbyterian Church USA, Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, American Baptist Churches USA, Mormon Women for Ethical Government, and the USCCB's Department of Justice. Grieve said that a conversation guide is being developed by the Institute. Quote, it's really important for anybody to explore a few questions together that look at the common beliefs, how they hold the Golden Rule as a practical idea, she said. Golden Rule 2020 encourages the fact that the foundation of our country and democracy is that a diversity of ideas is important for solutions and relationships. Grave added, "We've got to have the will to engage in those different ideas, but from a place of common respect and common listening to each other." If you want more information, you can visit the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops website. That's www.usccb.org. Interesting story there. You know, they talk about how polarized politics and really conversation is these days. Really cool to see efforts put forward by others to try to bring us back to a time of more unity and more agreement, and at the very least, more polite discussion. Moving forward here, a couple more interesting articles, one about moving your way out of poverty, one about education, again, as we noted at the start of the program. So as we dive in here, Monica Yeamans, the editorial assistant, brings us an interesting article about St. Vincent de Paul. St. Vincent de Paul microloan program offers a new way out of poverty. This past summer, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Northern Kentucky began a new venture to help those in need help themselves out of poverty, the new microloan program, A Path Out of Poverty. This new program has been successful through other St. Vincent de Paul chapters in other United States cities, such as Columbus, Ohio, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Dallas, Texas, and Arlington, Virginia. In partnership with the Kemba Credit Union in Florence and the Butler Foundation of Northern Kentucky, St. Vincent de Paul can offer clients an alternative to high-interest loans while also providing clients an opportunity to learn about personal finances through financial mentoring. St. Vincent de Paul, Northern Kentucky's low-interest loan, is a fully guaranteed by St. Vincent de Paul through its microloan program. Clients are referred by a Vincentian volunteer, and loans can be used to retire an existing loan or for help with a car, medical, educational, or even home repair expenses. St. Vincent de Paul of Northern Kentucky said that its hope for the program is to empower a person who has struggled financially and to affect systemic change in the Northern Kentucky community. Deacon Mike Lyman, the chair of St. Vincent de Paul in Northern Kentucky's Microloan Committee, which is a committee of seven members, said, "These loans have provided the opportunity to address immediate needs, such as car repairs, and to retire predatory loans. The program does more than that, though. For our neighbors, they offer the opportunity to grow in confidence and in financial skills. And for our Vincentians, they are blessed with the opportunity to enter into extended relationships with our neighbors, which allows them to influence lives in a substantial way. The money made available is helpful, but the hope generated and the mentoring support provided are the true riches of this program." Karen Zengel, the executive director of St. Vincent de Paul in Northern Kentucky, is an ex officio member of the Microloan Program Committee and reports that to date, the St. Vincent de Paul in Northern Kentucky has made 4 microloans available to clients. Quote, "Clients have the chance to get a loan to cover other expenses that might otherwise threaten their ongoing financial stability," Mrs. Zengel said. "The committee convenes every time someone applies for a loan. Deacon Lyman has set up a variety of trainings for the financial mentors, which is another important component of this program." Mrs. Zengel said that, quote, "While the loan itself is a really good opportunity for someone who may not otherwise have had a chance to take out a loan, the other really important component of this program is the mentoring piece. That's important on 2 different levels. It's important to the individual who is a borrower that we work with them to help them achieve their own personal financial goals. They may not have had any instruction or guidance on how to start a savings account or even how to open a bank account. We're helping the borrowers build a financial skill set. The other thing is, on the part of the St. Vincent de Paul staff, it gives them an opportunity to work with a person who really needs a commitment to make a significant change in their lives. So it's a different kind of experience than when they have the opportunity to do home visits. It's very motivating working with a person when you know they're taking steps to improve their lives. It can be very fulfilling for our Vincentians to have those chances to work with families who make a commitment." If you'd like more information, you can visit the St. Vincent de Paul of Northern Kentucky website, which is www.svdpky.org. Again, another cool resource that, you know, if you've got family or friends out there who've fallen on hard times, just something that's available here in our community, those who are giving back and performing good deeds. Like I mentioned, an article here about education. This is a Messenger staff report, and it's really to recognize Matthew Grosser. It's entitled, principal at St. Mary's School in Alexandria, is, quote, the 2019 National Distinguished Principal. The National Association of Elementary School Principals, otherwise known as NAESP, recently announced that Matthew Grosser, the principal at St. Mary's School in Alexandria, has been named a 2019 National Distinguished Principal. He's one of three Catholic principals in the nation to achieve this honor this year. Each was chosen by the NAESP from among the National Catholic Educational Association 2019 Lead, Learn, Proclaim Award winners. Each year, NAESP congratulates principals from across the nation, in both public and private schools, and overseas, for their exemplary achievements. The 2019 event was held from October 10th to 11th in Washington, D.C., and it recognized a total of 61 principals. A quote here, "I have certainly been impressed with Mr. Grosser's vision, professionalism, and his genuine concern for the teachers and staff, students, and the quality of instruction," said Mike Kleins, the diocese superintendent of schools. Moreover, Matt is a Christ-centered principal, husband, and father. In the past 9 years under Mr. Grosser's leadership, St. Mary's School has seen an increase in enrollment from 281 in 2011 to 411 in 2019. The preschool has also seen an increase in enrollment from 25 in 2011 to 95 this year. Additionally, in 2017, St. Mary's School was recognized as a National Blue Ribbon School of Excellence. In an article in the fall 2019 edition of Momentum, a publication of the NCEA, Mr. Grosser said, quote, "I always strive to portray a positive and upbeat demeanor in my everyday actions. I want an enthusiastic and confident attitude to be contagious." Mr. Grosser described his approach to balancing leadership and management duties as practical. "A critical piece is time management. I adhere to a specific morning routine to eliminate as many obstacles as possible that might pop up later in the day," he said. "If students walk into a clean, organized, and safe building, then they're in a good position to have a productive and enjoyable day." Once his routine is complete, he is free to be a hands-on presence in the school, greeting students, playing at recess, mentoring lunches, or whatever else might come up during the day. Quote, "This balance creates a dependability that breeds trust," he said. "Once people trust you, they believe what you say and follow your actions. A unified school is ready to take on challenges." Again, that's Mr. Matthew Grosser from St. Mary's School. So big congratulations to him. That's a huge accomplishment. We're moving on now into our commentary section. And so this first commentary comes to us from Father Daniel Vogelpohl. It's entitled, "Is There Bigamy in Heaven?" The readings for the 32nd Sunday in Ordinary Time on Cycle C are 2 Maccabees, chapter 7, verses 1 and 2, and verses 9 through 14, 2 Thessalonians, chapter 2, verses 16 through chapter 3, verse 5, and Luke chapter 20, verses 27 through 38. "I love my computer. I can sit and watch it do my work for hours." So reads the inscription on the coffee mug I was given for Christmas. The message fits, too. I love computers, but I can hate them, too. I have used a computer word processor for years in place of my old typewriter. I can correct all my mistakes before they get printed. I no longer feel like a majority stakeholder in the whiteout business or erasable bond paper. How many folks even know what that is anymore? I have even studied a little about computers on my own. I think I have a fairly good understanding of how mine operates, and I'm no longer afraid of it. But occasionally, it develops a mind of its own. It does something that I can't understand. And even if I can figure out a way to get around it, I'm still aggravated that I don't understand why it did it in the first place. That's when my love turns to hate. Just today, I was sitting at my desk typing away when suddenly my little wonder kept completely giving me one message. Illegal operation. Current program will be terminated. No matter what I tried to do, it kept telling me the same thing, and I gave up. It was and still is a mystery, and anything that is mysterious remains bigger than I am. I think it's always a little fearful to be faced with something bigger than ourselves. Today's liturgy brings us almost graphically in touch with one of those beliefs of our faith, which we've always labeled a mystery. Sunday after Sunday, we repeat in our creed that, quote, "We look for the resurrection of the dead. We expect it. We await it. But what will it be like? How will it happen?" That's the mystery we'd like an answer to. We'd like to be more comfortable with this belief. Today's first reading from the second book of Maccabees relates the story of the martyrdom of seven sons and their mother. The lectionary editors have spared us the very gory details, but the message is clear. They all died holding firmly to a belief in their own personal resurrection. One brother relates, quote, "You are depraving us of this present life, but the King of the world will raise us up to live again." The third brother had a very physical idea of resurrection. As they were about to cut out his tongue and sever his hands, he spoke these words, "It was from heaven that I received these. From him I hope to receive them again." The Sadducees in today's gospel story have a similar, rather material notion of what the resurrection from the dead might mean. They present Jesus with the case of the woman who had married a succession of seven brothers, outliving each of them in turn until at last she herself died. These Sadducees went to Jesus to tell which one will be her husband in the resurrection of the dead. And Jesus' answer confuses them. Quote, "Those who are deemed worthy to attain to the coming age and to the resurrection of the dead are like angels, and they are the children of God because they are the ones who will rise." What does it mean to be like angels? Do angels have bodies? We depict them in art as having bodies, but they're really pure spirits. We want an understandable answer to the Sadducees' question. We know lots of people who have remarried after the death of a spouse. Will there be bigamy in heaven? We somehow sense that the question isn't appropriate, but we still want to know how it will work. It remains something that is bigger than we are, a mystery. But our faith is sure, and in the surety of that faith, we remain confident that the deepest love we share here on earth is only a foretaste of the intimacy we will have in eternity. Our belief in the resurrection ultimately is not simply an irrational trust in a mystery. It's a belief in a person who has told us, "I am the resurrection and the life." Father Daniel Vogelpohl is the pastor of Blessed Sacrament Parish in Fort Mitchell. Coming forward here, Deacon David Prophet has an article for us entitled, "The Power of Redemptive Suffering." It's an early Monday morning, and I'm sitting in the waiting area of the St. Elizabeth Hospital Cancer Care Center. My dad is having surgery today to remove a part of a cancerous lung. While his prognosis is excellent based on the testing that has been done, it still brings a flood of thoughts and emotions. It also brings to mind the future of his recovery and what he'll have to go through to make sure the cancer's gone. Fortunately, he's a man of great faith, and he's entrusted his care to the Lord, and that is a big part of the battle. He knows that this is his cross to carry, and he also knows that his family is there to help him carry that cross. The word cancer is something that brings a darkness to everyone who hears that diagnosis. But our God is greater than any disease, and when you place your trust in him, you begin to see things differently. I know it sounds contradictory, but the cancer is a gift. It forces us to confront our own mortality. It forces us to realize that life is not in our control, and it certainly helps us realize what is truly important in life. One Catholic thought that drew me from my Baptist upbringing is redemptive suffering. That suffering can be a gift is counter to rational human thought, until one realizes that God has given us an opportunity to review our life and where we're headed. To take that suffering and offer it up for the benefit of someone else can be so powerful and an experience of great grace. When we, in our own human frailty, can use our suffering to benefit someone else, it reinforces how much God cares for us and those we care about. It has also made me realize how much this man means to me and how his example of faith has formed me. Although he is still a Baptist and our theology doesn't necessarily agree, I know that his faith is the risen Christ and he's every bit as committed to it as me. He showed me the way, and although I chose a different path on this journey of faith, his is as strong as ever. This is a debt to him I can never repay. Even though I didn't accept his path, he knows that I've accepted the path that the Lord has led me on. The challenge for so many today is that we don't have an understanding of how suffering can be an important part of our spiritual growth. Suffering unites us to the crucified Christ and helps us realize the great sacrifice that he made for us. When we unite our suffering with his, we can understand the power and the necessity of having an attitude of love and thankfulness. We can lay our suffering at the foot of the cross, and it becomes for us an opportunity to see our life within the context of the total human experience. Life is not long here on earth, but we're here because God wants us here, and he has a plan and a purpose for our life. That purpose is to share the good news of Jesus Christ with all we encounter, and to bring the joy of a life in Christ to the world. In the 7th chapter of the Gospel of Luke, there's a beautiful story of a sinful woman who comes to Jesus while he's dining with a Pharisee. She bathes his feet with her tears, anoints them, and dries them with her hair. Jesus then asks the Pharisee, "Simon, do you see this woman?" Simon saw her based on her outward appearance and her reputation. He did not see the true person that was standing before him. That question has become the cornerstone of how I see people today. Do I really see this person in front of me, or do I just assume or judge them by the outward signs that I see? I asked myself that question with regards to my dad as he's preparing to face this battle. Do I see him as the man I know? And have I looked deep enough to see the love and care he has for his family? I have now, and I realize that his cancer is a gift to me, because it's made me realize that he's been an important reason for my journey of faith. No matter what happens through this, I have been given the gift of sight to see the depth of love God has given me in my dad. Pray for him, and pray for all who are battling illness and addiction. I know it's hard to see, but it's a gift. I can hear the words of Jesus as he asked me today, "Dave, do you see this man?" I'm proud that I can answer, "I see, Lord, and thank you for this gift that is my dad." Deacon David Prophet is director of the St. Anne Retreat Center in Melbourne and is assigned to St. Timothy Parish in Union. Wow, what a powerful message. I know it's just human nature to rebel against suffering, to move away from it as quickly as possible. I just wonder for those of you out there listening and for myself, where there's an opportunity in my life to ask myself, am I really seeing things fully, and how suffering might change my perspective on what's really important. Well, that's all the time that we have today. We're ending on a great note there. We've had some really great articles this week. Just want to send you guys a heartfelt message that we're thinking of you, praying for you and whatever suffering you may have in front of you, and hope that you have a wonderful week and that you take care of yourselves. As always, we thank you for inviting us into your homes and spending this time with us. And we'll be back next week with next week's edition of The Messenger. So my name has been Zach Ryland. This has been The Messenger for Friday, November 8th. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Take care.